Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, Parpole Bros. This is a sort of bonus thing that you may or may not want in your week. On Friday, I did the first ever Parpole Bro live show, which was, well, an experiment for me. It was a live broadcast show where I did a little bit of jokes, but also was hoping that people would call in and I could have a chat with them and try and see if my political ideas hold up when I haven't fully scripted them in jokes and see if I can still make it entertaining. And also it was a bit of a test for the website Ramble, who are going to be doing live podcasting from their site, much like the one I did. And they asked me if I would do a test one for them, which I gladly did. And it didn't quite go as I planned. It was interesting. None of you that listen called in. And in fact, someone called in who'd sort of found it via the website, who had called themselves, as you're here, they had given themselves a joke name, and when I first saw it I assumed it was someone that listened to the podcast and that hey, you know, you're just being silly and maybe this would be quite fun to have a chat to, but actually they weren't a podcast listener and they ended up being very interesting. We discussed quite a lot of things to do with mask wearing and cancel culture, and also the state of comedy really, and a bit about politics too, and yeah, it was a very interesting chat, so I just thought I'd release it because I've got it. And if you'd like to listen to me speak to someone whose name I still don't really know, I still don't know who they really are, and I do hope they tune into the proper podcast at some point in the future. And if you did listen to the show on Friday, I'm going to be putting out a link on the next podcast, which will be out obviously on Tuesday, as per always, just to send any feedback to the Ramble website on how you think it could work better, because it's still in its very, very early stage, as you probably noticed from the website. But I'd like to do it again, and hopefully some of you that actually do listen will call in and we can have a chat too. And yeah, I mean, enjoy this, I guess, if you haven't heard it. Feel free also to skip it and just listen to the new show when it comes out on Tuesday. Here you go. Apologies for the poor sound quality and me playing a jingle from my phone. And I also should probably warn you that some of these jokes may end up on next week's podcast too, because I don't have the brain capacity right now to write things twice in 1 week. So anyway, with that spoiler warning, here is Parpole Bro Live, but not live, as it's recorded from the other day. Hello and welcome to the Partly Political Broadcast, but live. Yeah, I had to play that off my phone because I don't know how else to do it on this system. Welcome! This is the Partly Political Broadcast, but live, which is not to say that the normal podcast is dead, apart from maybe behind my eyes or in terms of notions of hope. But welcome. Thank you for tuning in. I hope you have tuned in. I might just be shouting this into the void. Absolutely no one knows or particularly cares. I'm Tina Duyeb, despite all my best efforts. And believe me, I really try. And this is a brand new thing. This is a brand new thing where I thought that, you know, I've spent the last few years
basically shouting jokes at you, often too fast, as people complain quite regularly. And, you know, I've been interviewing people, not the ones that you've recommended, because they're always too busy. And I just thought that maybe it would be nice to do a sort of live thing where you could call in and shout at me instead. And rather than the kind of structured, overwritten, often under-edited noise that I put out each week, this is just going to be a bit more of a freestyle chat, you know, with some actual views, if I have any, some actual hot takes, probably really lukewarm, quite tired ones. But freestyle, it's going to be freestyle, a bit like a sort of a jazz freestyle where, you know, it could be beautiful and melodious joy, or it could be absolute shit and sound like a lot of musicians all falling down the stairs at the same time, which wouldn't fit with current social distancing unless they fell one at a time. And even then, they'd probably take up time in the A&E, which, you know, they don't need that right now. Come on, jazz musicians. Also, of course, this is a nearly valid excuse to not have to do my daughter, sorry, agent's bedtime and read the really shit awful Winnie the Pooh 5-minute stories that she keeps insisting on at the moment. One of them in particular is about Roo needing a babysitter, which turns out to be Pooh. And Roo gets a babysitter, even in these times. It grates so much knowing that we can't get proper childcare right now. And fucking Roo from Winnie the Pooh has got childcare right there. Oh, yeah, there will be swears. This is interesting, this live podcast thing. I think it might catch on, this sort of talking into a mic live and people listening to it. I don't know, maybe BBC will sort of think about having their own channel or two with it. It could be very interesting. But it is a trial. It's a trial for me. This is also a trial for the platform that I'm doing this on, Ramble. As you may have noticed, if you've tuned in, the web link for this show is a beta dot then the website. I don't know what that means. I think that's a slur in sort of alpha American terms, isn't it? No, it just means that the site is still being tested out and seeing how it all works, which is why if any of you tried to tune into my attempt number one of doing the show the other week, it didn't work. And that was my fault because I put an image on it and the image wasn't right. And then the whole thing broke. And that is the story of my life. But anyway, if you have any thoughts after the show about the site as well, send them over to me and I'll pass them on. And hopefully this can become a kind of more regular thing with an even fancier site that does all of the clever stuff. So this show could be 10 minutes long or it could be an hour, and it sort of depends on you and if you fancy calling in. If you're looking at the Ramble page, you can do a little call on there. There's a I don't know how to do it because I'm on the other end, but I believe you just sort of press a thing and you call in and you have to sign in your details. I don't know what they do with the data. They might send it to Nazis, but I don't think they probably won't. I'm pretty sure they're nice people. They probably won't. I don't think Mark Zuckerberg will get it. But look, you do that and then you give me a call and I can choose to speak to you or not. I can kick you off. So mum, dad, just don't bother calling in. I'm not going to let you chat to me. But I'd love you to give me a call, really. If you've got anything politics wise to chat about, any of current issues you want to talk to me about, anything that I don't know about that you can explain to me, any of how your life is right now in this particularly weird and bizarre situation, particularly if you've got anything positive, any ways that you feel we can do anything useful in these times of endless shit, where it's clear the government wouldn't even piss on most people if they were on fire because they can't possibly piss on everyone, can they? Meanwhile, of course, if special advisor and son of salad fingers Dominic Cummings had set himself on fire while visiting a castle just to see how fireproof he was, they'd fight to be the first to coat him in urine while declaring that he was only aflame because he's a responsible parent. Anyway, yeah, so anything positive is good at the moment. Just anything at all, even a biscuit you had that was decent, something. Also, I'd like to ask, I thought it might be fun, right? I don't know if you saw the news, but the Flukeworm man from the X-Files episode, the host, aka Chris Grayling, has just been promoted to chair of the Intelligence Committee, despite being the absolute albatross of the political world, the complete opposite of King Midas in everything that he touches. I just wondered if there's anything that he would be good at. I mean, the fact that he's been made chair of the Intelligence Committee, despite lacking either of those two words within anything he does. I wondered if you could think of absolutely anything that he might be suitable for, bearing in mind that this is the man that spent millions and millions of pounds hiring a ferry firm that didn't have any ferries. I honestly think if he was hired to stare at a blank wall, it would somehow fall over or be stolen right in front of him. And then he'd end up paying like £8 billion of taxpayers' money to someone who once ate a Wall's ice cream to build a new one. But he's got a new job. twice disgraced Liam the Disgraced Fox is probably going to be the UK's representative to the World Trade Organization. An organization that he didn't even know what the abbreviation stood for. I think he called it World Trades Organization. It's the one thing you're meant to be able to deal with, you idiot. It's like he's appalling. And G4S have just got some big contract to run one of the super prisons, despite years and years of them not running anything properly and not even turning up for the Olympics, which is particularly, I mean, I say particularly shit. I think them not running prisons is probably worse on a scale of harm to people. But I know about that less. I just remember them not turning up to the Olympics and the army having to come and do it, which is... It's not a warm welcome, is it, to the world? But all I'm saying is I'm starting to think, like, what am I doing wrong? Because I fail at loads of stuff. I fail at stuff all the time, and I haven't got a job in the government. I don't have a top-ranking job. I must be able to... I managed to drop a peanut butter sandwich on the floor earlier. Where's my job on, like, the Department of Culture, Media and Sport Committee? I should be given something. How do I fail successfully? Or is the problem that I never had any money to begin with, and what I needed to be doing was wasting billions of pounds of other people's money? Is that what it is? I don't know. Any tips, ring in. Any tips on a job for Chris Grayling, please ring in. Any nice positive chat, please ring in. Also, as the Conservative Conference is going virtual for this year, even though obviously it's safe enough for you to go to the pub because you're not as valuable as them, it's going virtual because they don't think it's safe. But I suppose, let's face it, chances are higher in the Conservative Conference that overconfident flotsam Boris Johnson will shake absolutely everyone's hand there on purpose and manually pass around COVID all by himself. So they had to go virtual for their own safety, I guess. But what virtual Tory events do you think could happen instead? Have you got any ideas? Let me know. I honestly don't care what they do, to be honest. I hope they just forget to unmute everyone on Zoom. Judging by how Matt Hancock's app worked at the last conference, which gave away everyone's security details, entirely possible. Entirely possible. So if you fancy calling in with something hopeful, please do, or one of those other two things. But I mean, really, call in about anything you like, you know, politics wise, podcast wise, comedy wise. I'd just like to have a chat, you know, partly because I haven't planned enough for this show to last very long. If you don't. Also, I'm just going to relish speaking to someone who's over 2 years old right now, because that's my day. I sort of see my wife as I tag out, and she either does work or childcare, and I do the other way around. And most of my day today, for example, was spent watching my daughter dip her fingers in the mild mustard she wanted with her veggie sausage roll she was having for lunch. And then each and every finger had a different amount of mustard on it and therefore was a different member of the mustard family. So there was a, hello, I'm baby mustard. Hello, I'm mummy mustard. Hello, I'm daddy mustard. Hello, I'm granny mustard. And then they all had to talk to each other. And it went on for most of my life. I think most of my life. She didn't eat a single bit of the sausage roll. Didn't eat lunch whatsoever. Just talked to mustard. Covered herself in mustard, covered everything in mustard. Yeah. And I took her to the playground as well today because the playground reopened in our area, which I don't know. In my head, I sort of thought it's probably safe, isn't it? Because it's outdoors. And I got there and it was like a scene from Apocalypse Now. Kids were just running amok. It was like they were all on some sort of amphetamine. They're going absolutely crazy, all these children that hadn't seen playground for sort of, you know, three, 4 months. They hadn't really seen other children either. And so they were just tearing around like proper, just bonkers children. And of course, as adults, we're trying to social distance in the midst of it all, knowing full well our children are carrying everything because they're basically free public transport for germs. That is all kids do. I mean, I think I mentioned it on the podcast at the time, but, you know, it was only a few months ago before lockdown that my daughter went to soft play and came back with hand, foot and mouth, which I don't even know what that is. But I think if it gets worse, it becomes head, shoulders, knees and toes. And then she got it and my wife got it and I didn't get it because once again, I failed to go viral. But yeah, so anyway, all these kids, they're just running around. And, you know, there was a lovely moment when my daughter just decided to hold an older girl's hand to cross a wobbly bridge. And the older girl very consciously pulled her sleeve down so she didn't have to touch my daughter's hand, which is wise even outside of pandemic times. And all us adults were like, we mustn't be anywhere near each other. And then our child would like charge into another child and we'd have to go and get them and then suddenly be standing next to them and going, oh no, this is all gone wrong. I don't know how to do this anymore. It was terrible. So I've probably got the COVID. But then I feel like I probably had it right at the beginning of this. I don't know. Did you feel like that? I felt like that every 5 minutes of the early parts of the pandemic. I sort of did one cough and I'd go, oh no, I've definitely got all of it. I'm done for. And then I'd realize it's because I hadn't drunk any water, or I'd just woken up or something, or like a fly has flown in my mouth, something rubbish. I was constantly concerned. But there you go. Anyway, so yes, please call in. Talk to me. Someone talk to me. And I mean, there's loads to talk about today, isn't there? Tons has happened even since the podcast comes out on a Tuesday morning. I write it on the Monday, and then usually within about 5 minutes of me not even releasing it, usually within 5 minutes of me pressing the submit button onto the Acast podcast website, it's normally out of date. But there's loads. Even today, you know, we've the UK has opted out of the EU vaccine program. We don't want to join in with them all sharing a vaccine with everyone, and apparently it's because the UK is further ahead than them. It didn't really say in what. I'm assuming just deaths, probably just economic crises, maybe. I mean, it's just sort of sad, isn't it, that why can't we all just share the vaccine? I'm massively naive. I know. What an idiot that just assumes that as human beings, we should go, hey, we're going to make a vaccine, and then why don't we just give it to everyone? Because that'd be lovely. Apparently, it's not how it works. Not how it works, because human beings are awful. What they do is they make a vaccine and they just sell it to people. And then people that can't buy it, or countries that can't buy it, don't get it. And then they die. Isn't it horrific? Please call in with something positive. Please call in. So yeah, that's bits of news for tonight. And then obviously, the big thing this week, and I should warn you, if you're listening to this and you do listen to the podcast, I should warn you that some of these jokes may appear on Monday, because I do not have the brain capacity to write these things twice. But one of the big things that happened this week was, of course, Rishi Sunak, I'm going to do at the end of this, whatever happens, I'm going to read out all my descriptions of Rishi so far. But it's really hard to describe him when he's only ever a variety of of cartoon mice, like the one from The Rescuers, or on this week's pod, I called him Pinky without the brain, or there's both main characters, but from Ratatouille all at once. Oh, we've got a caller. I'm going to speak to you in just a minute. I've got a mental inability to see past the fact he looks like a giant mouse. Anyway, we had his mini budget summer statement economic update, and basically fuck you if you have a small business or you're self-employed or you've already made someone redundant, but it's okay because he's stolen a load of policies from Time Out Offers. Honestly, eat out to help out is a terrible slogan, isn't it? Not least because he should have gone with give head, as there's over 50,000 dead. But I'm still not sure how getting £10 off some fast food is going to leave me feeling like I've not eaten anything an hour later is really going to help me in any way. Not least, Boris Johnson's also pushing scrapping junk food deals at the same time. I mean, you've literally just given everyone a junk food deal. Isn't homemade junk food better anyway? Wasn't Boris all about oven ready deals compared to someone else making our food and sending it to us? It's all so very confusing. Anyway, there is a caller on the line. Hi, and I'm thoroughly impressed with the let's just speak to this person who's given themselves a name. I see Wiener. Let's listen. Hello. Hello. I can't seem to accept their call. That's good. As I said, this is a new thing. I'm guessing unless they just sent me a message and you're not actually calling in, it hasn't actually told me to accept your call. You're very new to this thing. It's an experiment. I see Wiener.
Hey, I see Wiener. Ah, I see what you did there. I'm going to get you.
I see Wiener has asked, what do you think about these masks we're supposed to wear and the ugly community refusing to wear them? Ugly pride or something. What do you think? Isn't it amazing that it's amazing that people are so upset about wearing a mask? I mean, isn't that, we're in an era of superhero films constantly being on. I mean, I've always said I'm really excited about the idea of going to the bank wearing a mask. That's kind of what I've always wanted to do. It's properly exciting. I just think it's such a bizarre thing to be upset about. There's so many. Oh, here we go. Hello. Hello. Oh, I've clicked accept call and hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you indeed. This is very exciting. There's a caller.
Wow. Wonderful. 2020. Amazing. Look at the stuff we can do with technology.
It's properly brilliant, isn't it? I mean, who would have thought you could do a phone call, but over the internet?
I know, right? And it doesn't even matter what my skin color is or my surname or anything. It's amazing, isn't it?
It doesn't matter, but I like that. I've just realized before we continue talking, I can hear myself in your computer. So would you mind just muting one of the things?
Ah, let me see. I've only been talking for a couple of minutes and you don't want me to stay quiet. Isn't that great? Shine.
There we go. Is that better?
Lovely. Yeah, better for me at least.
There we go. Perfect. Well, welcome, Icy. Is there a proper name I should call you by, or are we all right to stick with Icy Wiener?
You can call me Icy for short. My That's one great. Friend calls me that, yeah.
That's good. I like that. Was it Icy? I was wondering if it is like Icy as in very cold Wiener, or is it just Icy as in you can see Wiener?
A bit of both, actually. I mean, unfortunately, I was young enough to get the snip when I was a baby, so it's a bit chilly, you know, without the hood.
So. That's fair. And I wasn't expecting this conversation to go there. Good. So, Icy, I loved your question. How are you feeling about masks? Have you got a mask?
Yeah, I really like the idea of a mask personally. I mean, when I went to China, everyone was wearing the mask there, and I was thinking, why do everyone wear these goddamn masks? And then 5 years later, I know the answer why. It's not because they're ugly or anything. It's because there's a goddamn virus going around, and you should be wearing one.
Yeah.
What concerns me though is like I was in Tesco today, buying ice cream. You know, all with the
good
necessities,
work.
Right? No one's wearing a mask. Even NHS workers, no one, not one person. I saw someone like stacking shelves without masks, without gloves, and he was like coughing as well every now and then. It's absolutely insane.
It's completely bonkers, isn't it? I had to say, I went to Japan a few years ago, and I went to Hong Kong last year for some shows, which was amazing. And everyone was wearing masks all the time, and they did ever since SARS and swine flu and bird flu. Everyone, they've just gone, I don't want to give this to anyone else, and I don't want to catch it. It just seems, do you know what? It's just human courtesy, isn't it? It's really nice to go, actually, I don't think I should give this to anyone. I'll just cough in my own face. And here we're like, if I go down, I'm taking you all with me.
Well, I think it's more like narcissism, maybe. They're thinking, you know, well, the virus has gone through me. So, you know, it's sort of like a blessing if it comes to you at this point. I mean, the only place I went today. Mm. Yeah, no, go on, mate.
Oh, no, so I was just going to say, I did wonder if it's, because what I kind of figure out is if it's arrogance in that they sort of think, well, I'm invincible, I won't get it, or if it is the absolute, like you said, well, I've had it, you can bloody well have it as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know, it's kind of hard to say at this point. I think that the problem is people have gotten bored of the virus, I think, because the danger of getting the virus at this stage, like I don't have the virus, but if I did get the virus today, it would be equally as bad for my immune system as if I got it when it first came out. But the fear level has just dropped completely. So the threat is still the same, but I don't think anyone cares anymore. That's the main problem, I think. I've seen people in Cornwall and stuff, they've all started going to the beaches and all that jazz. I think that people are just bored of the virus, to be honest. I mean, can you get bored of something that's going to kill everyone? If there was a zombie apocalypse, do you think that it would be like The Walking Dead, or do you think we just get bored of it?
Do you know, I did wonder that. I do sort of now really think that most zombie films should have people giving up after we're going, oh, I don't care anymore, eat my brains, I'm bored of being inside, I've watched too much Netflix, just come for me. Like it does sort of really, you know, my whole views of how a pandemic or a crisis might happen before this were based on like seeing Outbreak or something like that, and now I think there would be a lot of people being bored at home ordering crap on Amazon, sitting in their pants, and then, you know, and then going outside and coughing on people.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense now, because I used to watch these zombie films and get really scared, like 28 Days Later and stuff. But then I also realized that if there's a zombie apocalypse, all the zombies are going to be equally as dumb as you, probably, because, you know, they're just people walking around. It's going to be your average politician and whatnot walking around with a half-rotten brain. Well, 75% rotten for them. But I'm starting to think it's going to be more like Shaun of the Dead. You know, you just walk outside, get your milk, come back inside, the zombies chasing you, but no one really cares. You know, you order your Uber Eats. It's all fine, I guess. Yeah.
Well, it's also that, just that worrying thing that I think, this is quite bleak, really, as I say it out loud, but it's that thing of, I see people online, people on Twitter that regularly go, oh, well, you know, they say that 80% of the population will get it and not have any symptoms. And you're like, you're willing 20% of people to die. That is absolutely what you're saying. You're 100% saying, I don't care about 20% of people. And I find that. Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'll be honest, I don't like people most of the time. There's a lot of people I don't like. If I drive anywhere, I hate everyone else on the road. I hate everyone on public transport. I generally go out of my way to avoid people. I don't want them all. I don't want 20% of them to die. I've seen the leftovers. I don't want that to happen. It's
right. So like, I agree that it's completely unnecessary and it's actually quite an insensitive and dumb comment to make, because personally, I'm quite the misanthropist. I want 80% of them to die because I want more room for me to park my fucking car in London.
Yeah.
How many of these times have you gone to park somewhere in London and it says, oh, for disabled people or for people who own a house in that area? If you're rich enough to own a house in central London, you're also rich enough to, you know, fucking afford parking for it as well. Give me a chance. I have an interview, you know?
Yeah, and they probably got chauffeurs as well. That's the other thing that was really sticks. It won't even be them that's trying to park in the tiny space. It'll be their butler. Mm-hmm. It'll be horrific, absolutely horrific. I feel very much, you know, that I regularly like it when places are empty. And I think the one thing that I'm taking away from this pandemic really is that I love it when barely anyone's in the supermarket, and I love it when there's no one in the park, and I really like it when there's no one around, which is terrible, really. So how are you? Are you coping all right? Have you been doing okay?
Well, to be honest, there's not much difference with COVID-19 and my normal life. Like, I don't go out and see anyone. I'm living with my parents, and pizza comes through the mailbox. So things are pretty much the same. But I'm very happy to know deep down in my heart, when I go to bed at night and put on a podcast to sleep to, that everyone else is equally as insular and lonely as I am in the middle of the night because they're all locked in their house. So that kind of makes my day feel a bit better, I guess. I don't know about you. I mean, how's it on your end?
I think I fully understand it. You know, my life is comedy wise is quite terrifying now, because I don't know if we'll ever have a comedy circuit ever again. But generally, most of the rest of my life when I'm not traveling to gigs is spent at home writing and just sitting in my pants. So if it wasn't for the fact that my daughter turned two pretty much as lockdown began, I think I'd have been absolutely fine, because she timed that so horrendously well that the tantrums kicked in pretty much on the first day we were told we couldn't go outside. And so I think with
It must be hard trying to find a clown for the birthday party, but I mean, you've got yourself, right? You know, you're a funny guy, aren't you?
I'm not, but not never to your own children. That's how the rules of comedy work. The rules of comedy are that you're never funny to your own children. You are often the worst person they've ever met, and the person they're least excited to see. So she's been trapped indoors with me for some months. It's rather lovely. But I'm glad you're doing all right. Thank you. Poor little girl. I really appreciate you calling in. You're the first caller to this live podcast. Very exciting. We haven't got anyone else on the line. Great. So have you got any other points of view you'd like to let us know about?
Well, we've been doing a little analysis here. What exactly is off topic? What's on topic is probably a shorter answer if you tell me what are the things that we can talk about. Because, well, you know, we've got freedom of speech and stuff, but my IP address is probably stored on this thing, and the police are going to give me a knock on the door any minute now, you know?
Yeah,
well,
I mean,
to say that.
Yeah, I mean, but you see, that's interesting. I still don't. I find the comedy, you know, for there was quite a while where we were told lots of people like to say that freedom of speech is banned in comedy, and it's because of the woke something. And never has been. People could have always been able to say what they like on stage, and people have always not liked it or liked it. And what you would do is you would either want your audience to like you, and so you change it to fit them, or you would or you just say it and lose them and keep the people on board that you did. And it never disappeared, but people like to make a big deal of it. So, for example, I remember not that long ago, a comedian who should remain nameless said, "Ah, oh, the community is trying to cancel me." And it's like, you're self-employed. We can't cancel you. You just keep working. Like, you can't, there's no boss. Like, no one's going to fire you. You're just your own boss. It's very hard to cancel someone who does their own work. I'm always opposed to, you know, and I think people should be able to be called out on whatever their views are. I think part of my concern with our current government is that they don't want to be criticized about anything. And I don't trust anyone that can't take, and Trump as well. If you can't take criticism, I don't trust anything that you do, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I think one of the interesting things about freedom of speech and stuff is, well, they say you got the freedom to say what you want, but there's also repercussions afterwards. So as long as you say it in a comedy club and while you're doing the stand-up, that's fine. But I think that the problem is nowadays, many of these comedians and stuff, they're kind of blurring the line between what's their comedy or their trade and what's their personality. So in terms of like Twitter and stuff, when do you turn off the comedian button? Or are you always kind of forced to be a comedian, even through social media, even through your personal life and stuff? Because now with a lot of technology and stuff, the barrier between your personal life and your professional life is kind of diminishing slowly. So do you kind of like feel that you always have to be funny, always on social media, constantly?
I mean, I've got personal, everyone has their own personal preference. So, and like you say, I think the line is blurred across for, like, you know, politicians, for everyone, really. It's quite mad that we don't know who we are anymore. But I have a personal thing where I have to tweet so many jokes before I'll retweet someone else's thing or I'll put anything serious. I'm aware that I was going to say a public person. How up my own arse did that sound? No, I'm like maybe below Z on the list. But, you know, I've got a public figure. I've got a website that can easily be found. And this sounds, you know, I know a lot of comedians have been threatened. I had a very good friend of mine that was stalked at every gig he went to for quite a while, and the police had to get involved. It was quite scary. I had a guy climb on stage once and try to punch me in the face because he heckled me, and I dealt with it, and everyone laughed at him, and he couldn't take it. And then he threatened, he lived up in Edinburgh, and every time I did a show up there, I got lots of hate emails, and they threatened to come along with all his mates to beat me up, and I had to get security. It was proper terrifying. But you realise how exposed you are. So if you have, if you put yourself completely out there without any sort of comedy or any barriers, people can find you. And I'm always just a little bit wary of doing that. So I'm very, on my podcast, I'm all personal views, but on Twitter, I'm a little bit more solid. I only put things that I can make a joke out of, I think. Apart from the odd, I think the other day I put a panic. Oh, I've got no career anymore. What do I do? But apart from that,
It's actually quite funny because in terms of what's funny and what's not funny, I've come to realize in my few years of being alive on this rotating rock that I think like anything can be called funny, even if it's like offensive or detrimental to someone, because sometimes someone will say a joke that's like totally not in my benefit and I'll find that the funniest out of all of them. To be honest with you, whether it's like ethnicity or anything, it's all fun and games and stuff. So long as you're not kind of pushing too far into a personal territory. But oh wait,
I am on a podcast.
Amazing.
Actually, who am I on a podcast with? You know, like I saw Ramble and everything, but I didn't actually catch your name, mate.
Oh, I see. So you're not a listener to the usual podcast. You have tuned in as a Ramble listener. That's fascinating. Amazing. Well, my name's Tiernan. Hello. I'll do an intro. My name's Tiernan, and I host the Partly Political Broadcast, which is a weekly, basically me swearing a lot about politics with a lot of jokes. And then I tend to talk to very clever people like yourself who explain political issues to me. So this week is a barrister who tells me all about the fact that courts can't do trials because they're not allowed close to people and juries can't be sitting next to each other and it's causing a massive backlog and everyone's very worried. And next week is someone who explains why the budget was shit. So so I've got it's things like that basically. But I'm primarily a comedian who I talk about politics because my own middle-aged life is boring and I'm more concerned about the state of the country than any. I've done all the observation bit of my comedy. I've run out of things and now I'm going, everything's fucked and I hate it and I don't like that everyone's having a shit time. How do I talk about that?
Well, you know, it sounds like we've got quite a similar mindset, to be honest, but like I think that the big difference is I realized that everything was fucked up way before coronavirus. So It took you a real kick up the nuts to wake you up.
Hey, well, this has been my podcast has been going for 4 years, but this is the first live one. And I've been doing political comedy for about 10 years. But this is just the first live podcast. So you are the first guest on the first live podcast. I'm really proud to have IC Wiener on my first debut live show. It's very exciting. I was just going to say that the interesting thing that you said about the comedy is that, like, I do jokes about things that I believe in. So I can't do jokes about stuff that I don't believe. And that's just a personal thing. Rights. But fuck human rights. I mean, what next? Animal rights, special rights for children? Where's it going to go? It's ridiculous. But there are, I toured with a comic who is horrendous some years ago, and he had a couple of jokes that were just off, like really against all my values, that would make me howl with laughter every single night that he told them. I respect the trade. I respect the art of it. I think the interesting thing is that audiences are changing. And I did I've got to be careful not to mention names, but I did a gig. I mentioned I was out in Hong Kong last year, and I was out there with a few acts, and there were three of us sort of newer-ish acts and one really old veteran act. And the audience were quite young, and all of us sort of newer acts did the kind of politics. We're quite left wing. We're quite sort of socialist, I suppose, but also just did, there was a female act. There was a sort of silly kind of animated act. There was myself, and we just did the comedy we like, and it smashed it. Boasting, but it properly went down brilliantly. We were very chuffed. And the veteran act went on and did the set he did about 20 years ago, which was all about how making women orgasm is incredibly difficult. Why bother? And the audience just went, we don't care. This is weird. This is old. Like, we've heard. Like, this is, and he just didn't do very well. And it was fascinating to see that a lot of people, I think, when they say, oh, you can't say anything, it's like, I just think audiences don't, like, I can't bother any, but like, they've heard it. We've had years of certain opinions, actually, and people are now changing how they are, and if you're not keeping up with how society is, then, you know, it's your problem if you don't want to change with it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah. I mean, I actually agree, because it's kind of like read the room, but it's also like read the times as well. I've noticed that so many comedians, it might be like a cliche thing or something, but I've noticed, like, I sometimes watch stand-up in my free time and stuff. That's actually how I found out about Ramble and stuff, through Twitter. Someone told me about Ramble tweeting, and there's this comedian. I said, oh, okay, you know, something interesting, something new.
Nice.
But whenever I watch, like, comedians, you know, do their gig or whatever, they always start off saying, like, oh, you know, I love Ohio, because they're in Ohio. It's kind of like a mill merge thing, where they're like, I love, and then enter this town's name. And then they'll say something good about it, and then say something really bad about it, and then everyone gets this weird, like, cathartic laugh. But in so many ways, though, it kind of seems ingenuine. It's kind of like pandering sometimes to those specific people. So it's kind of like just niching the, what would you say, like, making kind of like a performance just for them. So as a comedian, and especially if it's something online as well, since it's live, it's actually quite interesting, because if it's live, online, and digital, you could be speaking to anyone around the whole planet. So
how would you do that? Hi guys, I'm, you know, I love Cleveland, blah 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 thing. thing. Hi guys, I love planet Earth. And you're gonna get some bastard in the ISS fucking
going, hey, what about us? Yeah, you're right. You've got to realize that you can never please everybody. I love just how you diluted the absolute hackiness of the beginning of so many stand-up sets, and I think that's beautiful. I've done it myself so many times, because the only reason we do this job is because we've got problems and we need instant gratification, right? That's the main reason comedians do it. We discuss it in a very we discuss it like we've all got a problem, basically. Yeah. And we all got a weird need. Like, most people don't want to stand up in front of a room of strangers and make them laugh. It's a weird thing to do. Most people have a nice Friday night at home, having something to eat or whatever. We go into a bear pit of a room and go, hey, find me funny. It's fucking strange. But yeah, with the internet, I think that's the big issue, is there's lots of things that get taken out of context because the people that weren't in the room at the time now see them. People that would take the beginning of a joke without the full context of it, or the end of it without the full context of it. And so it's constantly blown out of proportion. And I mean, the thing that really winds me up is that a lot of the newspapers, will kind of go, this comedian said this and it's disgusting. And then that same newspaper will go, this person's oppressing freedom of speech and the woke universities are cancelling culture. And you're like, which way do you want it? Like, do you want comedians to say the awful things, or do you want everyone to be like, you got to choose?
No, I actually agree, because in terms of comedians, I think one of my favorite ones, I really like Dave Chappelle, and I like, what's his name? I keep forgetting. He made this joke about like Coca-Cola and keeping your legs open for an advert. It's Bill something. Bill Hicks. There we go.
Yes.
I don't know if you know. Yeah. So he's quite a classic. But funny enough, like, I don't see many comedians work the same way that he does, because you mentioned like eating something, just like go home, eat a burger, eat with friends for fun and stuff. Bill used to smoke during his shows and stuff, and he used to do all kinds of weird stuff like dance on the stage or sit down on the floor and stuff. And I don't really see many comedians doing that. And also, he didn't mind making anyone offended. Now, of course, it's all way, way, way before social media now. Again,
there's also other things. Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you there. Sorry, that's very. No, what were you going to say? Well, I was just going to say that there's also. Yeah. Sorry, I did it again. Go on, then you go for it.
Third time lucky. Huh? Go on, mate.
I was just going to say that the things with you, there are comedians that do that, but you don't get to see them on TV very often. That is the honest answer. And there are other platforms that you might get to see them on. I'll plug Next Up Comedy, which is really good. If you watch someone like Jordan Brooks on Next Up Comedy, he's completely batshit out of the box, will do many things that you don't see other acts on Live at the Apollo do. But the other thing is that Bill Hicks also was very well known, and the bigger you are and the bigger the platform you are, the less it will damage you to be controversial. And I think nowadays, and this is now going to be very interesting when comedy ever returns after the pandemic, if it's still the same, but a lot of people, not particularly myself included, I'm now too old and bitter to give a shit, but most people want a career on telly, and they want the things that will get them on the most platforms, and they want a set that will get them on primetime TV, and so they cater for that. And so you don't, the sad thing is television, particularly also for quite some years, wouldn't allow acts on Live at the Apollo if they were too weird or too surreal or too controversial. There's a brilliant act called Mike Wilmot who does filth in the most poetic way you can do filth. Like, it's, I would highly recommend, his Canadian comic is incredible. And he had to find a set from 20 years before that. He went through every set that he'd done for 20 years, and it was only one from 20 years ago that Live at the Apollo would let him do, because everything else was too controversial for it. So you're everyone's getting a very skewed view of what comedy, and I should say there are brilliant comics on Live at the Apollo, so I don't want to dismiss them, but you know that's why the things like Bill Hicks, you know, Dave Chappelle can do what he likes now. Dave Chappelle can absolutely do what he likes because he's Dave Chappelle. He can perform wherever he wants. And there's different things on there's different risks, different levels of risk for younger and different acts, I think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've come to realize as well that some of it is around identity politics and stuff. I know that being a comedian and stuff, you have to be quite Well, I wouldn't say you need to be left-wing, but your audience and most of social media who are going to scrutinize you usually are left-leaning. So do you think that there's some sort of correlation between like the idea of being like a minority and being able to make minority jokes? Because I assume that you're like a, what, straight white male, whatever. Yeah, your name's Tiernan, so I'm guessing you're what, South African or...
No. I just have hippie parents. I'm a London boy, but a French granddad, hippie parents. So that's the combination of my name. I'm a straight white London male. Mm. Yeah. But the thing also that you know, you have to realize that people say comedy is very left wing, but comedians or art, I mean, I'm calling us artists now, and there's a big debate on whether that's true. But, you know, art in general is always meant to provide an opposing view, and you're always meant to criticise the norm. And and the norm is, especially in the UK now, we've had right-wing or centre-right governments for a very long time. And so you can't provide an alternative view to that unless you provide... You provide the different politics. So, and by its nature, you know, if you look at lots of art movements throughout history, they've always been giving the audience the difference to what there is. I'm putting that quite badly. But so for a lot of comedians to be outside the box, we are going to criticize the people in charge. And like the government gets a lot of stick because they're the government. And if someone else is in government, they probably get a lot of stick. And when Labour were in charge, whatever your views on that Labour government, I've got far too many, not particularly favourable ones, but you know, there were loads of people did jokes about them and lots of people joked about them. And that's what I'm saying is that there's a weird sensitivity to it now of people are so tribal that they can't joke about their own parties anymore or their own leaders, because if you joke about them, that means you're anti everything they do, or you're anti their existence, or you're pro Brexit, or you hate Brexit, and it can't just be no, I'm taking the piss out of you because you're a fucking idiot and you said a stupid thing, you know. And it's what really upsets me, that everything has to be loaded. And I think Twitter is and social media is particularly bad for that, because there's less space to say things. And in comedy, at least, like I found what were you gonna say?
Yeah, no, I was keep that wonderful thought in your head. The thing that I realized is that in terms of social media and stuff, everyone likes to do this kind of like straw man argument. So if you say something, they'll kind of group you into one category. So to anyone right wing, if you say something slightly left wing, they'll say, that, oh, you must be a communist. Or, you know, if you say something right wing, you get pointed the bigot or Nazi thing. So it's quite tribalistic in the fact that there's only two points in this binary. It's either you're left or you're right. You can't really be on the left but have a right-wing opinion on something. You either have to take all of it or none of it, basically. It's kind of like a weird extremism. And you kind of get this echo, I don't know the right word. Yeah, it's like an echo chamber, basically, social media in many ways. I realize in terms of Twitter and Reddit and stuff, I'm not sure if you use Reddit or not, but people kind of get into their little nest of, like, familiarity. So everyone on Twitter and everyone on Facebook and everyone on Reddit, they only hear and see what they like to hear and see, and they'll talk to other people who hear and see that same thing and like that same thing. So you kind of get this feedback loop of people just kind of confirming each other's points of view. And then when you get someone who says something controversial, and it's not even something controversial really, it's just like a valid opinion to you, it seems controversial because you've been kind of like brainwashed or like trained into thinking that that's the evil thing or that's the evil opinion. And then everyone just kind of tears down the argument together in this kind of like hive mind collective. I've seen it in terms of comedians making jokes that they you've got like this cancel culture now, right? Where this one guy made one bad joke in 1998. Let's kind of like end his career kind of thing. Has any of that come back to you to like bite you in the ass or something?
I've had several jokes, and there are a couple of jokes that I've had to delete because I got. Do you know what it is? It was less that the. I think it was more that with Twitter, it's very hard to read the intention. If you read something in a tone of voice that isn't the right tone of voice, that's how you'll read it. And I put certain jokes that were meant to be sarcastic, and they were not. They didn't. I'd done the wording wrong, and I had to quickly. And I just accepted. Yeah, maybe I'll just do that one live, or you know. But there's also little things like, oh God, what was the? I tried to think what the joke was. I had a joke that slightly changed a fact so that it worked for the joke. And I will never put that on Twitter because I know everyone will tell me that's not the fact. Mm. But in you know, but in it was something like I can't remember. It was some joke about how when Trump said that London had a higher crime rate than New York. And I was like something like that. Yeah, but that's because the biggest sex pest moved to Washington DC or something like that. It was something, but in reality, this is so petty. But the crime rate, it wasn't the crime rate; it was a murder rate. It was the higher rate in murder rate. And I just know, even as basic as that, that someone on Twitter would go, it's not the crime rate; it's the murder rate, which means your joke doesn't. And it'd be like, oh fuck you, I don't care. Whereas live people don't care. And I know that's not even cancelled. That's not sort of being controversial, but it's just that level of pettiness. It's better not to get into it. And I think that, like, cancel culture is interesting. And I think people should absolutely be held accountable. But there's also got to be a chance to let people, you know, understand that people change and people change their minds and people grow and develop. Yeah. And, you know, it's a very odd line. I was going to say that the interesting thing you said earlier is that I found, and one of the things that I'm very much missing from real gigs is that when you speak to real audiences, like, for example, over Brexit on Twitter, it was either for or against everyone fucking hates everyone. Yeah, in the real life audience, everyone would laugh about it. Everyone was quite bored of it. People would have lovely chats in the audience. I'd be, you know, I think most people, like, I consider myself left wing, but I still buy trainers and I still, you know, I still do lots of things that rely on capitalism. And I think we're all... Everything's more blurry and more grey than we want it to be in the social media world, I think. Where do you place yourself? Where do you think you are politically?
Probably, I'd probably say that I'm a bit of a centrist, honestly, because there are certain things on the left that I like, but there's certain things on the right that I like. Like, in terms of government policies and stuff, I'm probably leaning towards socialists. I believe that we should have capitalism, but with a net to fall on. So, like, you can be as rich as you want, but if you, like, fuck up and you get fired, there's still, like, a net to catch you. In terms of that, the UK is pretty good. You've got countries like Norway and Sweden and Denmark and stuff. They've got it all right. But then the US is, like, the extreme of capitalism, where you can become a billionaire, but if you fail, you're also, it's pretty much like a death sentence in many ways. So in that terminology, I'm left wing. But in terms of, like, what do you call it? Like this group identity politics and stuff. I don't believe in any of that, honestly, because I think that if you want to break a group down into left or right or black and white or straight and gay and stuff, you end up with the problem of how do you define that resolution of breaking down something? So they say, like, nowadays you have, like, what's it called, where you have to hire X amount of black people, X amount of women, X amount of this, that. It's like discrimination. Filling a quota.
Yeah,
like, I personally don't agree with that, because I'm a man, and I'm not white, technically. I'm more like Middle Eastern. And I don't know where I sit in that categorization. So, like, if I got a job, or whenever I get a job, I'll never know, did I get that job because I'm good, or did I get that job because I just need an Indian looking guy to fill a quota? So it actually does more harm than good. I've had many female friends that say, well, whenever they get a job, they're not sure it's because they got, like, a vagina between their legs, or if they're actually good and they deserve the job. And that actually causes loads of stigma and lots of confidence problems as well. And there are other issues with that. I personally find that if you want to break down culture and people into certain kind of quantized brackets, at what point do you stop doing it? Because, okay, someone's black, someone's white, so this guy gets, like, more privilege because he's white. But then what if the black guy was a multimillionaire and the white guy was poor? Does he still have that privilege? And how exactly does it work? And something as complicated as life and complicated as society, it's kind of, it feels very strange, very cut and dry to kind of say, you're white, you've done this, you're black, you need this, you're a woman, you're and stuff.
Well, it's a lot of it's to do with that,
like, I never agree.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. I think it's, you know, the thing that I the more and more that I learn, I'm not anywhere near good enough in this, but, like, you know, the thing that we especially in, like, the UK, right, what we don't have is, we don't have an education and understanding of other people, and therefore we don't have a level playing field. You need a level playing field in order to do to not need positive discrimination, if you see what I mean, which is what we've never, ever had. And like Black Lives Matter protests recently really highlighted that very well, the fact that we don't even learn about the transatlantic slave trade in school in the UK when millions and millions of people were killed by, British colonialists and slave traders. And it's like, it's a big part of our history. Teach that instead of the fucking agricultural circle, whatever it was that bored the shit out of me in geography for years. Thanks, Mr. Spinks, with your coffee breath. And, there's if we learn and understand each other more, then there would be less a need for it. But I mean, I was even talking to someone today about how, you know, that by nature we're discriminatory because we, for like work and stuff, especially in like freelance world, I was talking about freelance work, and we tend to get work off people that we know. That's how it always works. But of course people know people like them. Mostly you have your own social circles and you know people like them, and then you don't really hire outside of your circle. And she said that someone that she worked for, this person I was speaking to earlier, they decided that for their company they had to stop hiring by experience. They had to start hiring by skill, even if that skill wasn't the same job that they were, you know, directly the same job, because experience was all the same people that had always done it. Whereas skill was, here's a whole load of new people, a completely diverse range of people that have got the skills to do this, but they've never been given the opportunity before. And that, just looking at it like that, is so, like, exciting. I don't know. You just go, yeah, that's what we should have always been doing. That's really obvious.
It's an interesting point, actually, because like in reality, what that is diversity. But instead of being skin color or gender, it's diversity of opinion and knowledge. Hmm. So it's still a meritocracy, if that's the way that you're thinking about it, because you're looking for the best man or woman for the job. And what's your criteria for finding out if they're the best person for that job? So to many people, it could be like, are they experienced, or are they just the best at their job, or do they have the most amount of time logged with our company? Are we familiar with them? Can we communicate? You know, like, can we talk to each other on a very complicated, you know, low level? It's very interesting now, because the hiring process, I've seen very, very strange hiring processes now where they have to talk about, well, I don't know how it works in terms of like a comedian being hired for a gig. How exactly does that work? Are you kind of like a kind of B grade celebrity where people come to you and they're like, can you do this gig we want you to be on? Or do you have to apply to them and then show like a CV or something? How does that work?
Well, it's all about experience. And just before I answer this, I'm just going to say to I have had a couple of people listening on Twitter going, I would like to call in, but I'm not as good as I see. I don't think I'll be as interesting. If you are listening, please feel free to call in. I was going to make the show about 10 minutes long. This chat's been fascinating. Thank you, I see. But if anyone else wants to call in, I will keep it going. I have nothing else to do this evening. My daughter's asleep. I got out of doing her bedtime. I don't have to be anywhere. It's brilliant. So I was just going to say, I see in comedy, we've had big issues with diversity. And the reason it's been changing in recent years very rapidly. It's been brilliant. But the way in which it works with gigs is that you do 5-minute spots, and when you get good enough, you do 10-minute spots. And then when you get good enough, you do 20-minute spots, and you kind of get boosted up the clubs. But then at the same time, it's all about which promoters like you. I've still got a couple of promoters that that will never book me for anything, and haven't in my, I've been doing comedy for 17 years, and I mostly get my work because people call me and book me in. But there's a couple of promoters that have never liked anything I've done and will never book me for anything. And everyone has that. And it was quite weirdly, the alternative comedy scene in the 80s was very I wouldn't say diverse in terms of ethnicity, it was very diverse in terms of gender anyway. And then that really changed, it became very male led and all the promoters were male, and it just became and then the gigs became very sort of male in that they were all just drunken stag dudes, and it led to a real dearth of female acts. And and that's changing now, thanks to acts like Sarah Millican, who've really sort of brought more people on board. It's been brilliant, it's really changed. But yeah, it's what's nice about comedy is I say this and people will complain because it's still not the same and there's still a lot of prejudice, but mostly it's on merit, and it's on the fact that you smashed that gig. Did you smash that gig? Did everyone laugh at your jokes? Yes, well then you can have another gig. And that is how it works. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it mainly comes down to, are you funny? And if you're not, then go away. And that is it.
Right, yeah. So yeah, it's just really merit-based then.
As I said, I won't say across the board there is discrimination. I know that there's been a lot of things coming out in comedy lately. While comedy's not happening, people have been addressing a lot of issues with diversity and also sexual harassment. Lots of things have been going on in our shitty industry. On the whole, it is, you know, if you do a brilliant 10-minute set at the Comedy Store, they might ask you to come back and do a 20-minute set. That's how it works.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually quite interesting. Like, it's like the fourth time that you said like comedy's dying or something like that. Is that stand-up comedy, like being in the same room as people, or do you mean just like in general, like just people becoming unfunny and they just don't find things funny anymore?
I hope this chat hasn't been that boring. In terms of, there's a big report that came out the other day. It was written in all the papers, but basically 77.8% of all comedy clubs are going to close within a year unless they gain some support. And the problem is that there's been a bailout for the arts, and the government have given 1.57 billion for theatres and you know, heritage sites. But the Arts Council, which has been given the money, doesn't consider comedy an art form, and therefore we're unlikely to get any of the money at any of our venues. And if all the venues close, we don't have anywhere to perform live comedy. And obviously we can't perform live comedy at the moment because it's not allowed, even though you can go to the gym, breathe on everyone, wipe your sweat on their face, and it's fine. You can swim in the same chlorine pool as them. But there's no live performance indoors. I think I've just announced outdoor performances, but that's terrible for comedy normally. So it's basically the whole industry is in a lot of trouble. And it's not just the comedians. It's all the promoters, all the PR, it's all the staff, all the venues. It's like thousands of people that have nothing. And there's a very small percentage of us that have qualified for government help, because a lot of people are advised early on to create a limited company if you're doing this sort of work, and they did, and now they get no money. So it's the whole industry is going, what the fuck do we do now? And there's been online gigs, and there's things like, I'm doing this now like an idiot, and but you know, none of it pays the same, and it's not as regular. So that's what I mean.
There's always the question of how do you monetize your skill, and especially if it's like an artistic skill, it's never discrete or kind of yes or no, like a STEM field or something. It's strange that comedy isn't an art, because I see it as an art. It's like music or anything else.
You're definitely my favorite caller.
Oh, thank you, man. It means a lot to me. I'm also your only caller, so you don't have any choice.
I didn't want to say that. I wasn't going to rub that bit in. I just wanted to, you know, just be polite. I was going to say that the bit that I say it's a meritocracy, the big issue that was one of the big issues in comedy, apart from diversity and sexual harassment issues, is also that, and across the arts, is that people who can afford to do them are doing them. So it's why you get your Benedict Cumberbatches in acting, because you don't have to worry about paying your rent because you've already got inheritance. And it was the same was happening with comedy, in that people with lots of inheritance and money behind them could not work all year and work on an Edinburgh Fringe show and lose thousands of pounds doing it because it didn't matter to them. Unlike me, I had to do a full-time job for the first 4 or 5 years of comedy, and then was consistently broke for about 6 years after that when I went full-time. But it's hard, and it's very hard for working-class comics on lower incomes to get into it and survive, because you don't get paid for about 4 or 5 years doing any gigs. And
yeah,
so
it's basically a game of attrition, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And so now with this sort of situation, if comedy's not being helped, again, the comics that will survive are the ones that have got money in the first place.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting point that you make. Well, I hate to call you out on stuff, but like right now you're on a live podcast, and hopefully many people will hear this in the future. Because the interesting thing is, although it's live right now, I've been told the way that Ramble works is that it kind of stays on a server for a long time, and anyone can later see it, right? So
yeah,
do you have a message for like other comedians or whatever? I mean, what is the solution, do you think, to save this art form? And I am going to say it's an art form, because I consider myself to be quite a funny guy, and it's only because I'm creative. And being a comedian is finding patterns inside something and then being able to pull that pattern out and make a joke out of it. So in reality, it's kind of like an art. You're going to have the talent for it. So what would you say is a good solution to kind of get the industry back on its feet and kind of get yourselves out of the shitter, basically?
That's a good question. I mean, I think mainly we should go around mugging people because we've got the masks already and they just won't know who we are. the sad thing is, I think really in terms of the UK, the problem is we're all being creative, and I think everyone's been brilliant. And since the pandemic, people have been releasing content and videos and blogs and live podcasts and all sorts of things. Comics have been still working and doing stuff just for no money. The issue is that without investment, we'll have nowhere to perform. And the same goes for theatre companies, and arts venues were already being decimated across the country, right, before this happened, and they're already having funding denied. But what I would say to comics is that we can actually perform anywhere. And comedy's happened in a church and in a park, and comedy has happened in some very unusual places. And there are ways to do it, and there are ways in which we can organise and do it ourselves. It's just, it takes a while to get your head around when your industry is gone, what you do next before, you know, you have to take a breath and pause and digest it all. And then you go, right, how do we work this out now? And I think we will. I mean, I think I'm probably going to keep shouting at people like you on live podcasts and things. You know, I think there's there's other methods that we've got, but it's going to take a while. And I think this, I think there's also just without doing too poor me victim culture, you know, I think it's just quite hurtful that we feel like no one gives a shit about the industry when we make so many people laugh and lots of community charity gigs all the time, and we're always raising money for stuff. And then you go, oh, but you don't want to give us any. Oh, okay, thanks. We'll just cry over here. Like, it's just.
Well, you know, it's a great way to tell. Are they laughing at you or with you? So,
I never know. I've never known.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I'm going to have to scooch over because I got fish cakes in the oven and they're going to burn soon. So I got about 5 more minutes with you, man. It's been so much fun talking to you and everything. I can't say I've learned anything. That's only because I have solipsism. So that's my problem. But
well, I appreciate that. I've learned stuff. You were fantastic. Thank you so much for calling in. I didn't think I'd have a caller in on this first one. And I very much appreciate you calling in. Maybe check out the Real podcast if you get a chance.
Yeah, will do, man. Well, you know, God works in mysterious ways and all that stuff, so...
Well, exactly. Cool, well, take care. Enjoy your fish cakes, and good luck wearing a mask while everyone else coughs each other to death.
All right, see you later, Tuna. Take care.
Bye. Well, there you go. That was IC Wiener. That was like an hour chat. This was meant to be maybe a 10-minute... I genuinely thought this is going to be a 10-minute podcast. I haven't prepped enough. I didn't think anyone would call in. That was a proper joy. I have no idea who IC Wiener is in reality, or he doesn't even listen to the podcast. But hopefully now we've got a new listener, and he was very, very fun to chat to. I think lots of interesting points. I probably said terrible things. Are you all going to unsubscribe now? Let me know. You can get in touch. I will stay on this for a couple of minutes. I was going to do all my descriptions of Rishi Sunak from podcast today. I've now got the hiccups, which is perfect for a live show. If any of you want to quickly call in, I'd do it now before I get into the descriptions. Otherwise, I'm just going to go and drink heavily. I'm not drinking at the moment. I basically binged my way through the pandemic and probably should stop now. So I've quit and now spend every night going, oh, I wish I hadn't quit. What an idiot. Anyway, so let me see. What was I going to very quickly tell you about? Oh, yeah. Well, listen, let's just do this. If one of you call in, we'll have a quick chat before I go. But I was going to give you all the descriptions of Rishi Sunak that I've done on the podcast so far. And it's not many because he hasn't been around for that long. If you remember, he sort of jumped in, you know, Angry Potato Sajid Javid's job early in February. Because Sajid Javid wasn't particularly happy. I mean, isn't it amazing? I always find it amazing that someone can be shit at their job and the next person comes in, you go, oh, wow, no, maybe the last person wasn't that bad. Everyone loves Sunak, though, in that way that, you know, in a hostage situation. I think I said this on the podcast this week. Apologies for repeating material. But it is like if you were taken hostage by some really awful kidnappers and one day one of them didn't poke you in the eye like the other one did. You'd be like, ah, he's the good one. He's really nice to us. No, they've still both kidnapped you. They're definitely awful. Anyway, so Rishi Sunak is a man who looks like he's modelled his entire life on looking like a stock photo of someone who just passed their BTEC. Rishi Sunak is like BFG the Young and City years. Rishi Sunak in every photo looks like he can't wait to sell you life insurance. Rishi Sunak is always grinning like he's been allowed outside for the very first time. Rishi Sunak is a man composed entirely of a toddler's dining set. I mean, that's based on, I've got a dining set that looks very like his face. Not me, obviously, I don't eat with it. My daughter does. I use a big spoon like a big boy. Rishi Sunak is a gormless cheese string. I'm going to be honest, I've used that description for about 15 different politicians now. I think Jeremy Hunt got it quite a lot. Jeremy Hunt also, I think, constantly looks like one of those inflatable wavy men that you get outside car sales showrooms. There you go. Rishi Sunak is Banzai from The Lion King. Really, it's uncanny. Have a look. Rishi Sunak is if Donkey from Shrek had used hair mousse. Rishi Sunak is Stickman from the children's book Stickman. Rishi Sunak is Lumiere from Beauty and the Beast, but somewhere between candle and human form. Rishi Sunak is the star of Pixar's Ratatouille. Yes, both the rat and the chef. I think I mentioned that one earlier. Rishi Sunak is Crash Bandicoot. Again, quite uncanny. Rishi, I wore a suit in my sixth form. Sunak, natural born estate agent. And Rishi Sunak with all the depth of personality that you'd find in a broken Tupperware set. Again, with the sort of plastic kitchenware there. I don't know why he gives off those vibes. But as I mentioned earlier, it's just very hard not to see him as a mouse of some sort. Well, look, none of the rest of you called in. I really appreciate Icy Wiener calling in. I find it, I'm saying his name now like it's genuinely his name. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm being horrendously awful and now I'm going to get cancelled for... I hate this. I hate cancel culture. I genuinely don't know. Oh, these millionaires have been told that they did something wrong. Oh, I'm sure they're going to have a shit life now in their mansions. Fuck off. Call out people for being arseholes. Always do it. People are arseholes. Look, listen, thank you for joining me on what was a very unusual, not at all planned live podcast. Let me know how this was. Let me know if you'd call in on another one, maybe with some of the questions that I'd asked you or something else entirely. You know, if you'd like to hear another one or never again, or you didn't even hear this one, in which case you won't have heard this bit, but you've got a lingering feeling like I'm disappointed in you and you won't know why. Or, you know, let me know if you've got any feedback for the lovely team at Ramble 2. Give me a shout and I will pass it on. Hopefully this has worked very well. As always, if you fancy chucking a few quid to the Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/parpolebro, or joining the patreon.com/parpolebro, which is going to let people use pounds and euros in a week or so. Very exciting. Please do those things because the Rona killed all of the comedy. And if you can spread the word and review the usual podcast too, that would, of course, be dandy. Right. I'm going to digest all of those things that IC talked about. And I'm also going to try and work out how I can fail so hard. I don't know, like eating crisps or something that they'll allow me to head up some sort of select committee. It's got to happen. It's got to happen very soon. Okay. Thank you tons for listening, Parpol Broers. And I'll hear you on the proper podcast. I won't hear you. I never hear you. I heard IC Wiener. I haven't heard the rest of you. But you'll hear me next week on the regular podcast. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.